The following is Annie Drinan's talk, Designing for Failure, How Creating Negative Personas and Failed User Journeys Make a Better Website, from the 2013 Information Architecture Summit.
The 2013 IA Summit podcasts are brought to you by User Interface Engineering. Stay tuned after the podcast for a special offer from UIE.
Well, thanks very much all for coming. I wanted to share some thoughts today on what I call designing for failure. So what do I mean by that? Basically, these days, we can't often control who comes to our site, uses our service. And some people who come are going to be disappointed. They can't do what they want. That's not because the site is complicated or badly organized or slow. It's just they're looking for a different relationship from that which a site can give them. And these days, disappointment leads to complaints, and social media channels means that there are just too many easy ways to complain. I've been working recently on a project that made me think about this whole question of disappointed users and wondering whether we can actually afford to ignore them. So I'm just going to be talking a bit about personas, about why I think disappointed users matter, and I'm also going to talk about this project I've been working on, case study, and what some other sites do. So if we start with personas, I'm not going to discuss the merits or otherwise of creating personas, but I am going to look a little bit at categories and definitions. Because my take is that there are basically three types. There are those that our client want to come to the site. There are those that our clients would rather didn't come. And there are those who may come but may not be satisfied. We start with the primary personas, the ones we really want. Kind of classic approach has always been that we do our user research and create primary personas from those. We then create our happy path user journeys where they have a delightful time meeting their goals. Thing is, I don't think primary personas are enough anymore. It's no good to think that if we give the dev team t-shirts with the primary persona names on, that'll do the trick. Because too many things go wrong in the world. For example, we often inherit existing personas. And sometimes they're bad, sometimes they're old, they're out of date, they're inadequate. But we have to live with them. And the other thing that concerns me at the moment is that we often get changes to functionality after we've created our personas. And that change can often let them down. The other end of the scale, we have what I call anti-personas. I think this is a bit different from some of the textbook descriptions. Because basically, I think they are bad people we want to discourage, or at least warn them of the consequences of them misbehaving on our site. Interestingly, Pruitt and Adlin have a different take on what they call anti-personas. They talk about just people you don't want to build a product for. I think that there are people that we actively want to discourage. A great example I found of that comes from MailChimp, from their terms of use. Because clearly somebody has sat down and worked out all the things that baddies could do with that service and do for evil. We have a very long list of terms of use saying all the things that you can't do. Here's just a couple of examples. There are also things about not decompiling the code or violating copyright, that kind of thing. So clearly this is something that somebody has very carefully thought about. A few other kinds of anti-personas. There are those people who intend harm. I'm thinking here of adults masquerading as children or people who merely want to troll. And then there are people who are too young. TV catch-up services with adult content, or alcohol sites, for example. So these are real people that we don't want to come to our site. And then kind of in the middle between those, we have what I call negative personas. They're not the primary audience, but they may still come, and they may be disappointed. Doing a little research on the definitions again, Alan Cooper described these negative personas slightly differently, helping us understand who we're not designing for. I think that's not quite right anymore. There seems to be an assumption that we can consider a group of people and then put them to one side. And I just don't think we can ignore them. I think we need to think about the needs of those people who are not our primary audience. And why do I think that matter? Once upon a time, I think marketeers really did care only about primary personas and meeting their needs, giving them what they want. Again, looking at Alan Cooper, talks about if only a minority love your product, you succeed. I don't think that we can really ignore other people anymore. I think we need to be aware of users who are surprised, disappointed, or downright cross by what they see on our site. I'm not talking about designing for everyone. We all know that designing for everyone is like designing for no one. I know the importance of a primary audience. But I think we need to acknowledge and work out what we can do to reduce pain points. A colleague of mine came up with a lovely example of this from a financial services organization. They were offering a single mortgage and had a very detailed idea of their preferred perfect borrower. So they had an online application process. So anyone could start doing that. And then at certain points, you would find people found they were being dropped out of the process. They weren't eligible. They were freelancers, or they hadn't lived at the same address for long enough. So these were people who had invested time on the application form and then found they weren't eligible. So they were obviously really annoyed. Now, it would only take messaging at the beginning of that process to say who the product is suitable for, or having more than one product so that you could filter people and go to different products, and then you would have more satisfied customers. Because mostly we're in the business of increasing the number of satisfied customers. Does it really matter? None of us like disappointing people. It's in our nature. But I think these days we need to remember that every organization is likely to have a presence on Facebook, on Twitter. And what we need to do is reduce the chance of complaints. Because although social media organizations, I'm sure, started out with very high hopes, we will have a Facebook page, we will say how great we are, we will make some special offers, people will like us and tell all their friends we're great. But as soon as you've got that channel, people are going to use it for what they want, not what you want. And what we need to do is make sure that we're making our social media a positive, not a negative force. In the UK, we have a number of railway companies, and some of them have problems keeping their service according to the timetable. There's a lot of hostility towards these companies. So I was looking at the Facebook page for one of these called First Great Western. They go from London to Southwest to Devon and Cornwall. So it can be a 6-hour journey, quite a long journey, long in UK terms. So they have a Facebook page. And they say things like this: we're making changes to the timetable. But you can find the summary. And these are the kind of responses they get. Nobody says, that's great, thank you, you're wonderful. It's, why bother with the timetable? It's meaningless, and that kind of thing. For Valentine's Day, they said, anybody planning a lovely romantic train journey for Valentine's Day? And again, all they got was this kind of, I tried to meet my wife, and we got delayed, and I missed the train. You know, it's very, very sad, really. So if we look about the project I've been working on recently, it's a redesign of a decorating company's website. When I got involved, they had already commissioned 3 primary personas who met their need. They felt they were really great. They met exactly what their intention for the site was. And they'd also made some decisions about functionality. So my colleague and I started kind of assessing the issues. For example, there's going to be no sales online, no pricing information online. And then there was the question of color accuracy. Paint colors are notoriously difficult to have accurately on a screen compared to on your wall. finally, they were talking about some existing functionality that they were going to take out for the initial releases. So immediately you're thinking, well, possibly even our primary personas are going to feel cheated at this point, and what about all those other people? So we sort of planned what to do about this, and we hit on this idea of creating what were in effect mini negative personas, just trying to work out who else might come to this site. She emphasises really high level with no research budget. So we did a bit of sort of guerrilla work in terms of looking at competitor sites to see what they did. We looked at the customer support logs, and then we used a certain amount of sort of UX experience, pragmatism, what you will. We then created these personas where we could say who they were likely to be, what they might legitimately want to do on the site, and were they going to be able to do it. So having gathered these, we then basically plotted out our failed journeys in the same way as we were also plotting out the successful happy path journeys. And this meant that we could show the client just the implications, for example, of the reduced features, so they could get a real handle on what that meant. Because this was the kind of thing that we could see happening. We didn't present it like this, but these are some of the points where we could say, at this point, they are going to find they can't see a list of equipment, work out how much the whole project will cost. So that's going to kind of annoy them. That will disappoint them. So we spoke to the client about this. As the whole idea of the site was around people falling in love with the colour rather than providing the full, this is everything you need to know about decorating your house. It's very much about, these are our lovely colours, think what this would be like in your house. And that was the way the personas had been created. But we worked out these other people. So what to do? Most of it boils down, and this is really links to Lauren who was speaking before, it's about effective messaging. It's about explaining what the site is about, what you're going to get there, and it's explaining what isn't possible. We actually had a strategy for off-white. The company has about 20, 30 different shades of off-white, and on screen they are almost identical. So we said, right, we'll need to have some editorial that explains you really need to get to your store, you need to get colour chips, you need to try these out at home. The main thing about this is that it's about being honest. It's not about being apologetic. It's merely stating what is the case. So I was having a look around for some other sites that tackle this kind of thing, and one of them was a bereavement site for young people. If we see here, they actually say, who is this site for? They acknowledge that people of different ages find the site useful, but they really stay true to their core. They're only going to be publishing messages by people in their core group. And they go on to say, you know, there are other places you can go. So clearly here we have the negative persona that is the bereaved adult. A very different approach to kind of honesty in how you describe yourself comes from the amazing Hans Brinker Budget Hotel in Amsterdam. Their whole site is written with this tone of voice. Clearly, they're trying to put off those people who might come and are likely to complain. They go on to talk about the bar that serves slightly watered down beer, the elevator that almost never breaks down between floors. And clearly, the negative persona here is anyone who is likely to be looking for a classy hotel on a budget. They really try hard to make sure you know what it's like before you turn up. In fact, if you go to TripAdvisor and look at some of the reviews, some people almost seem disappointed that it isn't as awful as they suggest. I mentioned that on the site we have no ability to buy online. So obviously we said, right, we need to find a store tool. We need that prominent. And what we also need is to have that, basically we put in, wherever we would normally have a buy now link, we put in a link to our Find a Store tool. We all started talking to the client about enhancing that with a real-time inventory check so you don't have a wasted journey, and enhancing that to a sort of reserve and collect facility. The UK walking boot company, Brayshire, has details of their products online, but you can't buy online. What they do have is find a store, basically as almost as part of the main navigation, to make it very clear how you can get that. Contact us. Seems very simple, is often really kind of hidden, difficult to find. We wanted to have a prominent link, a contact form, email address, phone number, and we wanted that for both questions about the site and also customer support problems. Because what we wanted to emphasize is that people should try and get all the complaints about the site dealt with within the site, not outside. So, because if you can contain your complaints by handling them within the site, within your own customer support, you're not opening yourself up to possible criticism. There's a niche walking holiday company called Headwater in the UK. Lovely walking holidays, lots of details online. You can get very enthusiastic, but you can't actually book online. But what they do is tell you to fill in an online form, and then they ring you, talk to you about the holiday, about your requirements, work out whether it's the right holiday for you, and then help you make the booking over the phone. So they're actually making you feel, they establish rapport, they're making you feel like you're getting special personalized treatment, kind of making a benefit of not being able to just book immediately online. So some conclusions. My main message, the main thing that I've been thinking about is that you can't control who comes to a site, so you need to make them not annoyed at the very least. So you need to think about your primary personas, know them, but think outside the kind of happy path approach. You need to know what other non-primary personas might do, and you need to do your best not to antagonize them, because you don't want complaints. Finally, I think I just want to say that if you design just for success, you get your hygiene factors right, but maybe that's all. If you start thinking in terms of designing for failure, you go beyond this, you get your hygiene factors, but you start looking how to handle some of the problems and work out solutions to those. So that means that everyone who uses your site comes to benefit. Thank you. And do we have any questions, for which you get a lovely book if you're the first person to ask a question?
Thank you. It was a very clear talk. Good points there. I was just wondering, you talked about anti-personas and about negative personas.
Yeah.
And I maybe missed that point, but what's the exact difference between them?
The anti-personas are the people you really, really don't want. They're the baddies. They're the ones you don't want at all. Negative personas are the people who have a perfectly legitimate reason to come, but they weren't your primary audience, so you may not have thought of everything. So they may come and find they can't do what they were hoping to do on the site. And that's where you risk them becoming cross and antagonized, perhaps because they didn't understand what the site was going to do. You get a book. If you'd like to come up afterwards, you get to choose a book.
We can do one final question, anybody?
Thank you, Annie. It was a great talk. I must admit, I have a sort of ambivalent relationship with the idea of kind of personas. I was wondering, you had a few quotes from Alan Cooper, it's kind of the seminal work on personas. Do you think that given the kind of context in which we're designing kind of websites nowadays with kind of social media and all these kind of channels for providing feedback, that we need to relook at kind of personas? Has that been stretched a little bit kind of too far, to almost kind of breaking point?
Yes, I do. I actually had a bit more about personas in an earlier version of this and took them out because it was becoming too much of a persona talk. But I think you're absolutely right. I think we need to kind of review our whole kind of fixation perhaps on personas. Anyone who was here who went to the experience mapping workshop that was a very different approach, in that it's about every touch point, every channel, rather than just about the primary personas, the people that somebody, often dare I say it in marketing, has decided is the person that you want to come to the site. Thank you very much and enjoy lunch.
The IA Summit podcasts are sponsored by the UIE Virtual Seminar Program, with scores of online seminars your team can access on demand. For free access to a virtual seminar, visit uie.com/IAS13. And you can find the rest of the IA Summit podcasts at library.iasummit.org.